The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development with your host, Pamela Robinson. International organizations, government agencies, and communities are addressing the challenges of developing a highly skilled, productive workforce to support positive economic and social impact. By staying on the cutting edge, you and your business stay ahead. Now, here is your host, Pamela Robinson.
Well, welcome to this week's show. And we're going to be talking about the power of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. It's a very pertinent topic, and the reason is because of the demand and the opportunities for high-paying jobs, for employment. And one of the studies that came out from the Department of Commerce, where they were looking at some of the workers in STEM and kind of compared it to, okay, in 2010, what volume are we talking about? So there's about 7.6 million STEM workers in the United States itself, and that represents about 1 in 18 workers. Now, in those occupations, and we'll talk a little bit about what the occupations are, the projected growth we're looking from 2008 to 2016 is going to grow by about 17%. Compared to do a comparison between non-STEM occupations. So we have some great guests today to kind of unpack some of the areas that are going on in the United States and also overseas. And our first guest is Phil LaFontaine. Phil, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Not a problem.
And Phil, you're the Director of Professional Learning Support Division with the California Department of Education.
Yes, I am. And one of the main areas that work not only in the curriculum areas, but also with teacher and principal quality.
Okay, wonderful. So tell us a little bit about what you do and what your role is there, and then we'll get into the details of STEM.
So in my division that I oversee, we spend a lot of time thinking about what are ways in which that we can engage students in the active learning of STEM in general, but also English language arts, foreign world languages, all subject areas, including arts. But we also start to think about in what ways can we engage our teachers in understanding how we want the education to occur so that we engage all of our students. So we think about teacher quality and teacher professional development. But what we also know, too, is that administrators, principals, play a very large role, as well as district and county folks, in helping to support all of our students.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I'm really excited because you all are going to be having your first STEM conference.
Yes, we're very excited. The superintendent of public instruction, my boss, Tom Torlakson, is convening practitioners, teachers, and administrators, and folks who are actually doing STEM in November 18th and 19th of this year in Sacramento. And we're looking forward to over 2,000 guests that will get an understanding of what does STEM education really look like.
Okay, great. And we'll put the website up about the conference itself and talk a little bit about that. It's the 18th and 19th of November, 2013, at the Sacramento Convention Center.
Right, right. And we're looking forward to a really exciting event. We have some great speakers that have lined up to provide their input. Actor Gina Davis will be one of our featured speakers, and so we're really very excited.
Oh, excellent. I know she is deeply involved with STEM programs.
Yes, especially trying to infuse and excite more girls and women into the STEM field.
Yay! I'm looking forward to that, too.
Yes, yes. It's a very critical area of our workforce and of our students as well.
Okay, so what I'd like to focus on for this segment is, let's kind of backtrack and see, because this is going to be impactful for the state of California as well as looking at you guys as an example. And there's a lot of states that are doing things in STEM and doing them differently. When you first started out, you all brought together like a task force. Tell us about that.
Yes, all last year, you know, the superintendent is a former science teacher before he went into politics, and so he's very much interested in how can we help students, because what we know, as you pointed out at the very beginning, California's economy is really based on STEM fields or STEM-related fields. And so what we're trying to do with our STEM task force is we brought together 40 individuals from business and industry, as well as from our K-12 science education and math or STEM community. And we really started looking at, so where are we in terms of STEM education? Do we have, is it prevalent in our classrooms or not? And what we really found out is that we have pockets of excellence. We have some areas that are doing exceptional stuff. Project learning, all of that type of STEM education, but we found that there were some barriers. And so actually we are working with Assemblywoman Bonilla and trying to think about, so what are some of the, do we need legislative fixes or do we need more resources? So it's really trying to figure out how the community can come together to really support the students in learning STEM education, both within the K-12 system, but also within our post-secondary, our community colleges and our colleges and universities. We really want our students to be successful and to be competitive for the 21st century as STEM becomes even more important.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you as a guest, because I want our listeners to see an example of how you are using a collaborative approach to addressing this.
Yeah, because what we find is that, you know, our teachers understand the content and they understand some of the practical application. But when a student goes out, and we have many businesses now throughout the state of California that are actually doing partnerships with high schools and community colleges where the students are actually interning. And when you start listening to some of these students who felt that they had no future at all in any type of a career, leave alone a STEM career, and you listen to them and they talk about how going to that internship was just so important, and it just opened their eyes and their whole creative ability to really think about, what does STEM really mean? How can I be a part of it? What's the future in it for me? It's just amazing. But that whole community support, teachers can do so much. The community is really stepping up, the business community, to help out.
Now, when we're looking at this, I know that the Economics and Statistics Administration with the Department of Commerce has kind of shown what kind of jobs we're talking about. What have you all seen? Because like you said, California is a great bedrock for, you know, STEM jobs. What career fields would be very attractive for your state?
Well, I think, you know, there's a whole field of engineering, and it encompasses everything from bridge building to microbiology and biotech industry. So there's a huge field, medical field. We know as baby boomers get a little bit older, you know, that's going to be another area where having STEM education is very important. Aerospace, I mean, the list goes on and on. Technology, computer technology, all of that is becoming very, very important, but you must have some type of a STEM background, whether it's a community college. We also know that in career tech or in career education, you know, the high schools go so far, but you really are going to need that sound base at the high school level, but you're also going to need some type of post-secondary. And so it's very important that students and parents understand that, you know, a high school degree is not going to get you where you need to be. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to do some post-secondary. And this STEM education is really what's going to help move everyone forward.
And I think it's important, too, like you're saying, you can't start once somebody gets to high school because you wouldn't have gotten the foundation.
Yeah, so what we're really looking at with our new state standards in mathematics and our soon-to-be new standards in science and engineering. These are really meant to help students delve deep into the understanding of the content of the science and the math and the technology that we know today, but it's also trying to help students get those skills for what's going to be in the future. So we're really excited about our new standards and helping our teachers and our students understand all of that.
You know, now we have, our listeners are in the business community, they're in international organizations, government agencies, and communities, and one of the things is this may seem a little overwhelming because of, you know, the science and the mathematics behind it. How do you integrate those so that it will, and I'll talk a little bit about the approach to the learning. Is it going to be different than maybe in the past? So the question becomes, how are you all making it inclusive for students? So that maybe some that may not have considered a career or looking at these areas looks at it as an attractive path to go rather than daunting that, well, I may not be good in that area where they may not recognize it. How do you do that?
I think that's really a key issue. You know, in the past we've had, you know, science is hard, math is hard, I don't understand it. And I think what the way that we were instructing students was really not as engaging as it could be. And so one of the things that's really coming out very strong is project-based learning, and that's how you can integrate it. And so what happens is the students pick a project that's maybe on their campus or in their community. When I was a teacher, we were looking at a community pond, and it sounds like, well, that's not very exciting, but what the students started really studying the environment of the pond and really started taking ownership in it, and that's one of the things that we're hoping is that not only are they engaged in the learning, but that they also start to take responsibility and start to impact the communities that they live in. But this project-based learning has really come on very strong. Practical, hands-on type of learning within the classroom, really trying to think about, so once you understand what the natural world is doing, like maybe there's a pollution problem, okay, so how big is this? And that's where the mathematics starts to come in. But then for the engineering piece, it's like, okay, so you have this pollutional problem, you figured out where the point source was, and now you start to think about, so how do you actually mitigate the situation? And so then you start to engineer a system, or you start to think about, well, do I need to study it more, and do I have enough technology? And so it really starts to integrate, and one thing starts to fall into the next, and mm-hmm. that's what we're really promoting with our new science and math standards.
Oh, that's wonderful. When we come back from break, I want to delve a little bit more into your standards and how you all are approaching it a little bit differently to make sure that it is more engaged learning, like the project-based learning that you just mentioned. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DWIA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DWIA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DWIA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC. Or go to www.teamfv.com. Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynard. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
If you're just joining us, we're talking today about the power of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And our first guest is Phil LaFontaine, and he's the director of the Professional Learning Support Division with California's Department of Education. And we were just talking about how education has to rethink the approach to how we're teaching these the curriculum and the approach to learning. And Phil, you were talking about that how is this changing the way that we've thought about the approach itself from the standards perspective?
So in the past, one of the things that we were really trying to do is cover a large array of information. And so you'll hear the conversation about a mile wide and inch deep. And what that really goes to is that we were trying to cover so much information that students really couldn't delve into the content and the practices that are necessary to really understand the content. So one of the new pieces or the revisited pieces, and this is not the new thought. We've been investigating how students learn, how people learn, what is it that our schools should be able to do for over 20 years in my field. I've been in the business for 30 years. And really what we found was that we were spending a lot of time in mathematics, for example, of teaching students exactly how to solve a problem in a particular way. And what we've come to learn is that mathematicians really solve problems in many different ways. The mm-hmm. same thing happens in science. What we found was that we felt, and our science standards are 15 years old, we kind of thought that, well, what was important is for them to know everything that we know today. Well, but the problem, again, was we were going so wide that the students really didn't get the depth of understanding that mm-hmm. really wanted. So the new standards are really honed in a little bit, and they really provide the deep, rich content that we're looking for, but it also gives them the strategies and the skills to really delve in deeper, and they're usually called the practices of science or the practices of engineering or the practices of mathematics. And so what these practices really do is they give students the ability to think critically about what's going on, to actually solve problems. So when you have a math problem, there's more than one way to solve it. What's the way that you think is will help you to solve it? And then here's a different way. And so it's really doing that critical thinking. But one of the things that's really coming through in our English language arts that is infused into all of our subject areas is the whole issue of argumentation. You know, when people think about arguments, it's really coming from an emotional point of view. Mm-hmm. Sometimes arguments are that way. But what we're looking for in education as an argument is really, how did you come to know? What's the evidence that you have that base what it is that you're displaying as the knowledge that you understand? So it's really changing how teaching is going to occur. It's really going to change how students approach all of the subjects.
That is so good, because I can tell you, I remember in some of my grade school where, I mean, we were given these problems, you were able to work them in class, and then when you got home, you completely forgot what it was because there was no connection to mm-hmm. practice. There was no connection to the real world. It was just the mathematics by itself.
One of the things that we found in colleges is that we had students who were very educated in mathematics problem solving, but when they actually got to when it was used practical, it was like, well, which formula do I use to solve mm-hmm. this practical question? And they couldn't figure out because there was no book saying when you're in this problem or when you're in this situation, you use this problem. And so it's really helping students to delve into not only what we know, but how did you come to know it as well.
Exactly, and I think that's the key, so that the connection comes on. Whatever your natural gifts are, you can start asking those questions.
Exactly.
That's wonderful. Now, one of the things I also want to ask is, from a practical standpoint, because this is so huge and so impactful, what can the community do? What can parents do? What can students do? What can businesses do and agencies? Because this is everyone's business.
Yes, this is everyone's business, and it's going to take the full community to work on helping students to move away from just Googling or just answering questions to really thinking about, so what does that answer mean? So you actually just touched on it a little bit. A parent, you know, many times we see parents going to museums. We see parents going to the zoo. We see parents going to science exhibits, the Exploratorium, Lawrence Hall of Science, and it's just kind of walking around and there's no real engagement of, so what is it that they're trying to show? When you go to some of these places, things that parents can ask is, so what do you think is happening? Why do you think that that's what's occurring? What evidence do you have? It's really helping the student just really quickly, the child, just engage in it. When my granddaughter and I go to these places, it's always, so Ava, what do you think about that? How do you think that that happens? What do you think you could do differently? You know, she was developing, she was actually engineering some roller skates the other day, and I kept saying, so how do you think this is going to work? Oh, well, I'm going to do this and this. And then she went to and she developed a plan. You know, it's all of that type of stuff that parents can do, just engaging with their students in the questioning piece. But when you start to talk about local communities, you know, I think folks are really thinking, well, there's some magical foundation or something that's going to come in and help my school, because this type of education is going to require more resources. And so, you know, the state has a certain amount of money that they can spend on this, but there's local resources that could really help. Some of the service organizations I've heard have been purchasing, like, microscopes for the sixth grade classroom. Well, that's very important, because without that piece of technology, students may not get that advantage. So it's really going to take, but, you know, on the corporate level, we have many corporations that are now stepping up to the plate. I was just talking to one of my funders for a project that we're doing, and he said, you know, it's not only happening in California, it's happening across the nation. You are having business and industry and foundations that are very interested in helping our students do this type of work.
Okay, so here's the thing. For those of you that are listening, that are in business, that are in industry, you have a lot of problems that need to be solved. And you would be amazed at how children, which have that natural curiosity, may approach it. So
yes.
Provide those, all analytics starts with the basis of what is the problem? What is the question that you're trying to solve? That's a great opportunity.
Yes, that questioning is so important. And, you know, you were talking about community problems. You know, one of the things that when I was the high school teacher and we were studying that pond, we really started to delve into, why is this pond not a sufficient environment for fish? And so we did a lot more research in it. We found out that part of the problem was that it was too much algae and there was not enough oxygen in the water. So we developed a system to try and think about how can we help that to occur, because everyone wanted fish in there. So, you know, even the local projects could really be helped out by students just thinking about, so what's the problem that the community's having that maybe they could solve? That's that project-based learning. Another group I know was thinking about water pollution in their runoff water, and what they found out is that when they looked at parking lots, that parking lots was the source of all the pollution. The cars were dripping oil, and the oil was going, so they tried to figure out a way in which they could mitigate that pollution issue. So, you know, don't underestimate the power of some of the students in their thinking.
Absolutely. Now, one question I have, you were talking about, okay, so parents, you can take your kids to museums and then start that questioning, but what if you you haven't been to a museum, or what if you're not, you don't have a pond that's close to you?
Mm-hmm.
What if you're in an underserved community, or if you're not in a good school? How do we make sure that we are engaging and we're not leaving folks out? Because that child or that person that wants to go to college may be the next person that has the idea or can innovate but may not have the opportunities. How do we make sure that this is inclusive?
Well, this is one of the things that, you know, has been happening across the nation and in California, is that some businesses are actually going into schools that may not be as environmentally friendly or as environmentally rich to help students like that, and they're bringing in technology, they're bringing in docents, they're bringing in mentors to really help those students to move forward. But one of the things that I think people don't understand is every school is sitting on a plot of land, and so there's always studies that can be done within the within the schoolyard. There's garden projects, there's inhabitant studies, there's many things that you can do as a teacher and as a community. But, you know, this is one of the struggles that we have, is how do we work with some of our, especially our inner city students, where we have some students that quite frankly have never been to the ocean, mm-hmm. you know, or they've never been to the Sierras. So, you know, that's where some of the community can help out in thinking about, are there ways in which they could provide resources to make that occur?
Yeah, that's so important. And I'm glad you brought that up about the environment or the school itself, because I'll tell you, some of my best learning has happened outside of a classroom.
Right. And I think that's one of the key pieces, too, is that, you know, there's a certain amount of learning that you can do within the classroom, but there's a certain amount of learning that can be done as what they call field work. But people think, oh, field work, well, you have to go to the Sierras. No, I actually did field work right there on my high school campus. I mean, you have to be a little bit creative, but you have to think about what are the best ways to engage students. There's also a lot of simulations on computer, simulations that will work. There's a lot of opportunities, but you do have to kind of think about what is it I'm trying to accomplish and where can I go.
Okay, wonderful. And then the other question I would ask is, when you all started looking at your standards and bringing together business and industry and community, did you also look at other countries as well?
Yeah, in fact, you know, the Common Core State Standards that were adopted a few years ago, and now the next generation of science standards that were that are under deliberation right now, these were not only developed in California, these were developed with other states in the nation. And as we really started to look at that, we also looked at, so what is it other nations are doing to help? We've had several folks going to Canada. There's some innovative things going on in Canada, Finland. You know, all over there's innovation occurring. I was just speaking yesterday to a group from Korea that were trying to understand what California education is about. So I think the national community is coming together, but I think the international community is also starting to come together.
Oh, absolutely. And if your organization is involved with any type of STEM programs or initiatives, please email us and let us know what you all are doing so that we can continue to share this information, not just in the U.S., but also globally. Thank you so much, Phil, for being on the show today. Really appreciate your insight. And what are some key thoughts that you would like to leave with the listeners?
Well, I think what's important is that the educational system, our students need to be competitive. And what we're working within our K-12 system is refocusing, revamping, re-energizing our teachers and our administrators so that students really walk away with the education that they need to be competitive in the 21st century. I think that's what's key. And parents, community members, business, industry, everyone needs to pull together to try and help students to really move into that direction.
Thank you so much. And one thing that I would also add to that is that if you are a college student and you are in a STEM program, go and visit the K through 12. And let them know what you're learning and how you're approaching it. Because people need to see examples of what this really means. And they need to see it not just from the teachers, but for someone that they can
emulate that is really doing it, that's a little bit maybe closer to their generation and so forth. So
I would agree wholeheartedly.
Thank you again so much for being on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks, Pamela.
We'll be right back from break with our next guest. Stay tuned.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DAWEA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DAWEA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DAWEA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com. The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional banker's hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel. Did you know that at the root of every business problem lies a communication issue? Communication Nation, a show that brings effective business communication practices to the masses, addresses a number of topics and talking points that impact your professional development, as well as business productivity and profitability. Host Jill Schiffelbein makes the theoretical tangible. Tune in each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Be ready to become a better communicator with Communication Nation.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
Well, welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the power of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and how it's going to affect and how it is affecting all of our lives. And one of the things that we've been talking about is some of the jobs today, and it might be like a disconnect between the opportunities that are present and in the future, but how many students are actually going into degrees of science or engineering with that comparison. One of the organizations that's taking a look at that is the Alliance for Science and Technology Research in America, and we have a guest with us, Bob Berga. Welcome, Bob.
Well, thank you very much, Pam. What a pleasure it is to have an opportunity to have a conversation.
Exactly. Now, you're the executive director of the STEM Connector Project. Tell us about that first.
Well, STEM Connector is a joint project between Diversified Search, LLC, and ASTRA, the Alliance for Science and Technology Research in America. ASTRA was looking all along to try to map this area of STEM that we're talking about, to say, what organizations exist out there? Who are they? How would a parent or a student connect with these organizations? So we started mapping this about 2 years ago, and thanks to very generous grants from many companies and foundations, I do especially want to call out the Cisco Foundation that has done a tremendous job of supporting ASTRA's work. We actually have started to map this. We have about 6,200 organizations that have been identified on a database that can be accessed by topic, by zip code. Hear that, parents? You know, if you want to know where the local astronomy club is, put in your zip code, and you might be able to find, something at the local high school. So at any rate, from that, we spoke into many other projects, including trying to profile what we would call STEM organizations, their programs, their goals, and the results they're achieving. So this has been a fascinating navigation of what we think is a STEM ecology. It's a complicated concept, but many organizations are involved in this. These include youth organizations, out-of-school organizations, business entities. Many, many people are concerned with this across the board. It's a lifelong learning proposition.
Okay, wonderful. And if you haven't been on STEM, it really is a one-stop shop for the STEM Connector. Bob, what's the link that they can go to the STEM Connector?
Yes, they can access it in two ways. They can go to www.usinnovation.org, which will give you much of the content. That's the Astra site. And they can go to www.stemconnector.org.
Okay, wonderful. So you guys check that out. There's a lot of resources there. As he said, there's thousands and thousands from business, industry, across the board, and many, many topics. So hopefully that continues to keep growing so that all of us have access to this to see what's going on so we can improve our economies.
Yes, in fact, Pam, I'd like to remind the readers that on that site, Astra and funded through Cisco just completed a major study in collaboration with My College Options, which is where are the STEM students and where are the STEM jobs? We've broken this data down by every classroom in America that is taking a standardized survey through My College Options to see where STEM interest is. Surprisingly, about 28% of kids are interested in STEM careers. Mm-hmm. But then we go state by state, and we look at the jobs, the projections. We go out to 2023 based upon some of the data that we've been analyzing. And we'd say, what specific STEM jobs exist in every state, and where will they be? And it's just fascinating to see how important this is for our economy, but also for our future.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I did look at that. I think that's great. I looked at Georgia.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, so we're doing some great things here as well, and I look mm-hmm. forward to having more of our universities and local community organizations also on the show. So let's kind of delve into the learning aspect, because one of the things, of course, is we want to make sure that as we see these opportunities to these jobs that will be paying more than what non-STEM jobs are doing, I want to make sure it's going to be inclusive, so that in the past, you know, you've had people shy away from the sciences and engineering. So it's like, well, I'm not good with math. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. how do we change that? How do we approach this a little bit differently? Like when I was talking to Phil of how they're doing like project-based learning, mm-hmm. what are you all finding across the spectrum?
Well, fascinating. There is a massive effort to try to be inclusive and to do, we kind of call this the diversity or equity track. And it's not just ethnic diversity or racial diversity. There's a massive problem between our cities and our countryside. It's broadband access.
Well, I was talking about girls, too.
Yes, exactly. And so when you consider that kids in Montana might not have the same access to digital content, to digital learning, it's a serious problem that can impede economic development, all sorts of things, future careers, interest. So there are many things that are involved in this equity thing. There are some tremendous organizations as well that are working very hard. And in fact, we have a whole category under so-called diversity and gender. That's a very important part of this discussion. That, you know, there are some tremendous efforts afoot. Just some examples that come to mind. The 4-H organization was going to try to get 1 million kids involved in science and engineering. Well, they far exceeded that goal. The Girl Scouts are very active in this area. There's all sorts of good news that they can find profiled on our STEM Results Project. We have about, I think, 120 or so organizations up and profiled. So individuals listening to this show, businesses, could actually access information and find contact people if they are interested in local programs that relate to this topic. But it's, as you say, the parents have to be involved. The teachers have to be involved. What Phil LaFontaine was saying is so true. This is a community-wide challenge, and a community-wide effort has to be made.
Absolutely. So even if you don't know anything about this, even if this is not your domain or anything that you've studied, definitely check out the resources so that we can make sure that we're investing in our kids, because that becomes the next generation of the workforce, and it helps us sustain our economy.
That's true. And Pam, I'd like to dispel a common misconception about so-called STEM jobs. We have the data up there, which I think we call it like 99 bottles of beer on the wall. We have 99 STEM job occupations that we have massaged and looked at. And surprisingly, many occupations do not require PhDs or even 4 years of college. There are tremendous opportunities in STEM-related jobs. We mentioned mathematics. Well, the largest STEM job category that we have been able to find under our microscope, I would call it generally accounting and financial services.
Woo-hoo! Well,
it's immense, but you got to have some math, right? You got to, you know, financial analysis, stockbrokers, investment people. It goes on and on and on. The people who figure out if I can qualify for a mortgage. That's a STEM occupation. It's math, right?
Okay. Wonderful. And then how do you all make sure the businesses are being engaged in this? You mentioned Cisco earlier. What other companies do you see that are taking a, you know, first step forward in really making the investment and opening up the opportunities for actual careers?
Pam, I'm actually located here in Washington, D.C., and I would be crazy if I answered that question directly, because there would be a list of at least 150 to 200 companies that would come to mind. However, I would like to refer you to the STEM Connector homepage to look at some of the tremendous effort across the board. It's not just aerospace companies or information technology companies. It's many, many people. It's manufacturing.
I was going to say, what industries then, if you can't say specifically, what industries are you seeing?
Well, I think those industries are most active where they are experiencing STEM labor shortages already. So, yes, the defense-oriented industries, aerospace, financial and accounting, but surprisingly, a massive export industry, perhaps our largest beyond tourism, is agriculture. It's a massive enterprise, but you've got to be kind of an engineer, a chemist to run the farm, right, or to run an agricultural business. They're very, very active and supportive. Manufacturing is across the board because we don't have the skilled labor to, you know, run the control machinery even. So it's surprising, but it really is a cross-section of the economy. It's not just focused upon, many people say, oh, it's information technology. It's not just
information. No, that's just one area. That's just one area.
Definitely.
Okay, wonderful. When we come back from break, I want to delve into, you all had a report that was put out called The Revolution of K-12 Education.
Yes, we'd love to talk about that.
Exactly. When we come back to break, I want to kind of delve into that a little bit to look at the approach and how we're making sure learning is done in a more engaging way. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
We spend 70% of our week in the office. What is the difference between enjoying your job and enduring it? The number one motivator is a positive work environment, and that's where Real Recognition Radio comes in. Join your hosts, Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown, as they take a look at the positive factors of the workplace, such as employee rewards, recognition, incentives, and much more. Tune in to Real Recognition Radio, Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DAWEA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DAWEA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DAWEA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development.
Welcome back, and we've been talking about the power of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, otherwise known as STEM. And we're here with our guest today, Bob Berga, and he is the executive director of the STEM Connector. It's a one-stop shop for all things STEM, and hopefully that continues to grow. Now, Bob, before we went to break, we were talking about engaging students in a different way, and I had mentioned to Phil earlier that, you know, in the past, I know in my early years of education that I didn't really get a connection between, you know, the math and sciences to reality. And I'll be honest with you, I'm still trying to figure out why we had to cut open a frog. I still don't see the relationship between that. But
hopefully we could have a virtual or a digital frog these days and be humane about that.
What does the frog? You got to connect it. I'm business and finance. But one of the things is, you know, how do we approach it so we engage all students in their learning because they have a natural curiosity, so that they're not afraid of the science behind and the theoretical pieces behind STEM. So talk to us a little bit about the revolution K-12 that you all
I will, and I have to be restrained because this is such an exciting topic, Pam. We just completed a report that had 98 contributors from across the world. It's called EdTech Revolution in Education 2013, and it is available on the www.usinnovation.org website. You can download that. My God, it's 15 chapters that answer your question. But in a nutshell, number one, we should take heart that the technologies being developed today will reach our kids. For example, a couple of things. The gaming and so-called edutainment sectors are creating whole new learning environments for kids. You know, you've seen it, of course, or it's been reported on about how the kids' brains are a little more amenable when they're gaming. Well, we can get through basic scientific or mathematical principles to kids when they're in this gaming state. So much is being done. They're very exciting stuff. Another thing, the devices that have been invented, I mean, I'm holding one or was holding one a few minutes ago, where you have instant answers, instant internet. The whole paradigm of how we teach is being challenged because teaching is not the same as learning.
But here's the thing. Yeah. How do you do that and of course integrate the technology but also integrate the critical thinking?
Here it goes. And one of the things that came out in the report that I was quite unfamiliar with, and I think the readers will be fascinated by, there's something called the maker movement that's afoot in this country and elsewhere. It is using these technologies and things like 3D printing to have kids involved in actual manufacturing,
yes,
in design. It's incredible.
We were just talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, well, imagine this. When I was in high school, we had the shop. The guys went there and worked on the jalopies. There was home ec, and you know, the girls were making brownies to try to, you know, court us. There was the art room. There was the choir. There was the band. Well, imagine, you know, and it still was sort of hierarchical, and we had to do this and that. But the fact is, the maker movement combines basically all of these things into a flattened structure of creativity. So many of the most
Give us some examples, Bob.
Okay, so a creative kid who might be prone to be a juvenile delinquent if they feel they're in a prison and they hate the authority structure can be engaged by saying, hey, here's a problem. How do we float this across a pond? Or how would we design this? And all of a sudden they'd say, well, you mean I could print it? It's my idea? Yes, we don't know how to figure this out. So if you give a group a chance to collaborate, it's shocking the stuff that kids are turning out today. Circuit boards, all sorts of manufactured goods. You know, it's not just things like jewelry. It's things that are very useful pieces and parts. So it's kind of logical to say, where would this start? Well, it's all over the industrial Midwest. You'll see maker movements in Cleveland, in Pittsburgh, in Chicago. New York is a huge center of it. In fact, this maker fair movement is spreading all over the world.
But
and there's a fascinating chapter on that.
Mm-hmm. But I think also you mentioned, you know, it could be the very technical, but don't overlook the jewelry because that could attract girls that may be interested in that aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely. I think craft in and of itself, the creative arts, in fact, many people argue that we should call this area STEAM, you know, that would include the arts. They certainly are part of it. I mean, when we listen to Bach, isn't that pure mathematics reduced to music? I didn't think of that. It's astonishing. But there are new ways of visualizing data, for example, that are coming out of our high schools. There's new software where, you know, this creativity is being unleashed. So we're very excited about how this can engage kids who otherwise feel that they're in prisons. You know, think of that. There's a study quoted in our book that showed that the average high school kid is more regulated and regimented than a Marine Corps recruit at Paris Island. Think of that. Well, no wonder kids get turned off by a structure where a whistle blows every now and then. It's all the do's and don'ts. You know, they're so totally regimented, and then they're given a pile of homework. They're not interested in this stuff, and they react.
I don't think it mimics the real world, if you will. I just really don't. I mean, it sounds a little boring.
Yes. And so what you have to do is have teachers who understand how to engage the kids. It's as if we have, you know, a different century of models in terms of how you teach versus how you learn. But I do think the system is working itself out. For example, you talk about STEM jobs. More than 660,000 STEM jobs were developed in just the last 3 years for apps development. Kids can get into that. They understand coding in a way that
exactly.
I certainly don't.
So what kids would determine boring, you have to still have some aspect of the teaching, but it also has to be engaging to their own reality.
Precisely. What Phil said about discovering the parking lot problem with pollution has happened time and again where kids are coming up with apps that solve basic problems or they find solutions in out-of-the-box ways that we never thought of. It's so obvious that we don't see it. That happens every day.
Okay, so let's talk, before we close out, about involvement. How can businesses get involved?
I think businesses should look very carefully at the organizations and charities and other groups they are funding. They need to realize that this problem is essentially a local one. It has to do with funding, particularly of public schools. You know, it's a shame, Pam, that the fate of many children is decided upon the school districts in which they happen to reside. And that's based upon the tax mechanism and the relative wealth or poverty of a given organization. So businesses should figure out where they belong. They ought to look at their own naked interest, right? Do they need software engineers? They need to get much more involved with local chambers of commerce, businesses, with schools.
Community colleges. There are many exciting programs.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Community colleges are a huge area of a very, very positive development. But I do think it takes shoe leather. It takes commitment, and it takes commitment to a belief that we've got to do this investment. Somebody else isn't going to do it. They can't. It's a nightmare to be a teacher today in many people's opinions. And the paperwork that has to be done, it stifles the creativity. So that's probably another show. But I think businesses can be very meaningful in funding correctly those organizations that are producing results and supporting youth groups and others that are involved in this.
Okay, wonderful. And so as we talk about this collective action, this is, like I said earlier, this is everyone's business, mm-hmm. from businesses themselves, and then finally also parents. How do you get involved? We've given you a couple of examples, students that are there. And like I said, I'd like to see even the university students kind of go into the schools, whether they're private or public, to show those that are younger. Because you even have kids that are in school and that are entrepreneurs, because you can take this information and actually use it. But we want to make sure that the approach is there, that the learning is there, and that it is very inclusive to give folks that an opportunity to pursue careers in STEM. Mm-hmm. Any final words before we close?
Well, just to thank you for an opportunity to direct your listeners and perhaps the users of the website to come and get more content through us and many other groups. You can link through us to literally thousands of other organizations, many of which may be accessible through Zip Search that will be right in your locality. You may not know they exist, and they could be across the street. So this is a tremendous public service you've done, and we look forward to future engagement. But read our stuff is what I would urge the listeners as well.
Okay, wonderful. That's what we're trying to do, guys. We're trying to make a difference. We're trying to connect economic success, profitability, and also social impact. Thanks so much, and talk to you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Pam.
Thank you again for listening to the Future of Workforce Learning and Development. Please join your host, Pamela Robinson, again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.